During Stage 10's race winner interview with Quickstep's Matteo Trentin, the interviewer made the point that Quickstep had won 5 stages of the Giro, the Tour, and now they have 4 stages at the Vuelta. To that statement, Trentin replied, "Well, I guess I have to win one more." To which he promptly did on Stage 13, giving Quickstep 15 stages so far for the 3 Grand Tours of 2017, and also his 3rd of the Vuelta. Most of these victories are spread across 3 riders: Gaviria in the Giro, Kittel in the Tour de France, and Trentin in the Vuelta. Trentin has 3 victories and 1 second place. For a team that really gives zero support to a Grand Tour rider, Quickstep have definitely maximized their return this year in the Grand Tour. Welcome back to the Between Two Wheels podcast, episode 14, the Labor Day Vuelta Rest Day Edition. I hope you had a good weekend. It wasn't too hot out where you were. Here in Northern California, it's blistering hot, and we still got out on our bikes and had some fun. All right, well, as pointed out in the opening, Trentin is really going well in the Vuelta this year with 3 wins and a second place. His win in Stage 13 was very impressive for what I would call a second-tier sprinter in a mix of GC contenders for Stage 13. I say second-tier sprinter because at this year's Vuelta, there's really no dominant sprinter. Trentin, if he were matched up against Kittel, Gaviria, his own teammates, Cavendish, he would not be the main guy going for the stage wins. Therefore, you see him as a second-tier, which the Vuelta kind of points to. You have guys gearing up for the Giro earlier on in the year. The Tour is obviously the main focus for most of these guys. And then you have the Vuelta, which is really a climber's race and one that the sprinters, the big guys, do not want to be showing up at. Trentin comes in and he's throwing it down. One thing that is impressive to see is he's basically putting himself out there as the prime guy for the Italian team on the upcoming World Championships later on. So before I recap Vuelta stages 13 through 15, let me just tell you what's on tap for episode 14 of the Between Two Wheels podcast for today. We had the NorCal Masters Juniors District Crit Championships this weekend, and we'll give a rundown of some of the results of that and how the races themselves went. I actually participated in one, and we'll talk about that as well. Riding in the heat, we have Coach Nate Dunn's tip of the week, and where he talks about riding in the heat, which is pretty appropriate for our weather here as of late. And then we'll recap the Vuelta. Like I said, stages 13, 14, and 15. All right, so this weekend was the Northern California Masters and Junior District Crit Championships. This is basically your state crit championships for Northern California. The state splits it between the North and the South. I believe even part of Nevada is blown in there. So it's what I would consider your state championships for Criterium. All right, so it was blazing hot yesterday, September 3rd, Sunday. And then we had a little bit of wind. The course is located out in Pleasanton, California, basically a business park with partially protecting some of the courses with the wind. But there was some wind that was strong enough to cause a little bit of havoc if you were not able to, which made it hard to get away, basically. So I personally raced in the Masters Division, the 45-49. And it appeared to me, well, it was the biggest field of the day, of the weekend. And I also stayed and watched then the 40 to 44 group, 35 to 39 age group as well. I had some good intentions of interviewing some of the winners and other participants, but I kind of got sidetracked from a call from my wife, who's out of town right now. So plus it was miserably hot and I just got sidetracked. So I do apologize for that. But I was able to pay attention. I did get some insights from several guys along the way, including my own, some of my own thoughts, and those of my teammates. All right, so let's just get to some results. I'm going to roll through some of these Masters divisions. I give you maybe the top 3. Some of them are some small fields. So I don't know that I feel like I want to go even 3 deep on a field that's only 6. These guys have problems with that. Maybe they could send us a line, give us an email, and maybe come on the show and say why I should talk more about their race. So, all right, we had the Masters 60 to 64. It was won by Tim Davis of Cycle Sport. The 65 to 69, Don Grijalva of Cycle Sport. The Masters 70 to 74, John Petrakis of Sun Power Racing. The Masters 75 plus, Michael Freeman of Hammer Nutrition. It looked like there are only 2 in that race. looks like longevity is a way to get a title at some point. Maybe you just stick around. You're one of the people that can survive in life, be able to get on your bike, show up to a race, and you get a chance to get a bear jersey of the state champion. So we had the 55 to 59. This one was quite a decent sized field. I'm looking through, there was at least 32 signed up, and you have some pretty heavyweights in this one. Larry Nolan of the NCCF Team Specialized Masters won that over Jerome Nadell of the Thirsty Bears. He's actually reigning national champion in that age division. So as you can see, it would be a tough one. Bill Brisman, Peninsula Velo, was third. Then we have the women's 50 to 54, 55, 59, 60, 64, 65 podiums. Laura Furman of JL Velo won the 50 to 54. Marianne Hernandez of Davis Bike won the 55 to 59, 60 to 64. Camille DeLuca Flaherty, 65 plus, Sarah Stearns. And like I said, there's not a lot of participants in those ones. You know, I want to talk a little bit about the participation quotient in some of these races. And we were having a discussion about that on a drive home, which was a nice long 2 hour ride. Came up with a few ideas. Well, a few we'll talk about. Okay, so we had the 50 to 54 Cat 1-2-3-4 men, and it was won by Joseph Stern of Team Specialized Touchstone. Yetch Cowhey of the Michael David Winery was third, and John Fairbanks of Rio Strada Racing was third, rounding out your podium there for the 50 to 54. Get on to some juniors. We had the juniors 9 to 10. Not a lot of riders in there. I think there's only 3 or 4. Massimo Morrison and Ryder Watson, along with Maxwell Doyle. That was your 1-2-3. Junior girls 9 to 10. No participants. Junior boys 11 to 12. Walter Rozek, the Reliable Taco Bell Racing Kinetic Cycles. He was the winner. Jules Gowans was second, and Ethan Garcia was third. And then you have the junior girls 11 to 12. Chantel Tupaz of Jack Rue won that division. Moving on up to the junior boys 13 to 14. Aiden Jose of the Velo Reno team. Ewan Houston of the Christian Cycling Hammer Nutrition. And Artin Durensoy of the NCVC United Healthcare team. Moving on up to the girls 13-14. Emily Menares of the SJBC won that one. Now into the women's, the 35, 35, 40s to 49. You had Emily Mathew of the JL Velo winning her 35, 39 division. Rika Jepson of the JL Velo winning the 40 to 44. It looks like there were only 2 participants in that race. And the 45, 49, Rochelle Ortega of the JL Velo. So JL Velo seems to be coming out for the women all across the board here in the Masters and on up, and the juniors as well. Okay, so we're getting to the junior girls. No participants in the 15 to 16. No participants in the 17 to 18. That's a little sad to see. Junior boys, we had the juniors 15 to 16. Jonah Kellogg of Team Roseville Cyclery. We actually ride quite a bit with him. Usually on our Wednesday ride. He's a nice kid. And I saw the finish of that one. Came through and I talked to him. He said he came through the last corner about 10th place and thought he was too far back. But that sprint is, I want to say it's almost 300 meters. So it's a good long sprint. And he was able to wind it up and actually came across quite handily the winner of that race. So it was good placing by him to be that far back, I guess, for his race. Did not work. I had a similar situation. Did not work for me in my race. So anyway, congratulations to Jonah Kellogg. And the boys 17 to 18, Hans Poulsen. Let me just actually give you the full top of the 15 to 16. We had Javier Acosta of Jack Rue and then Grover Rozek of the Reliable Taco Bell Racing. He also joins us in our group rides as well. So good to see him out there pulling out a top three. 17 to 18, Hans Poulsen of the TNA Duro Junior team, Cameron Hawk of Limitless Cycling, and Stefan Hubrick of the Don Chapin Monterey Bay Racing team for the boys 17 and 18. All right, so now we're getting into the big boys, what I would say, kind of the meat and the potatoes of you're still kind of fast, you used to be fast, yeah, you got to be pretty strong to hang in here with these guys. So we have the 45 to 49s, the 40s, the 44, and the 35, 39. Let me just say real quick, so this is the same course they've had for last several years, and last several years it's gone clockwise, and this year it changed, and the start-finish was actually on the backside of the course, and it went counterclockwise. What it did the last few years going clockwise and where the start finish was, the sprint was short. Come around the last corner, you're not going to, maybe you're going to gain one position at the most from the last corner. So the second to last corner was kind of the way you went. But then that was a long stretch. So you'd have people coming into the second to last corner and then just lighten it up, a full sprint to get to the last corner. And so it ended up being a long finish in that sense, because you're actually winding up way outside 300 meters because people are all going and you can't be left behind. This year, they went the opposite direction. Like I've said, they had about a 300 meter sprint from the last corner. The startup with the 45 to 49 as a race I did, it was won by your perennial winner, Dean LaBerge of Pete's Coffee Racing. It was actually a photo finish between him and Sean Bagley of Cortex. And then Ruben Meza is finishing out the top three of the S2C Bosch presented by Prilizumi team. I actually got 10th in that race, and I'll just give a little perspective. The team with them, you get this with these divisions where you typically have a master's team like we have here. And the master's team, you have a full contingent of riders. They either do the 35s plus or they do the 45 plus, but they can do both races, so you can have a full team of support. Well, these ones are separated out by specific ages, so you don't have that luxury. And what you end up having a lot of times is a team with a bunch of riders. We had several years ago, Mike Spikes' Masters team was a big contingent in my field. And this year it was Thirsty Bear. They have a good contingent actually throughout most of these. And in my race, there was, I want to say, at least five. And there were some pretty strong riders, you know, Chris Phipps, Newton, and there was a good bunch of guys, and then they kept the pace up and they kept attacking, so it was difficult. Now, they didn't really have a sprinter in the mix, so their whole thing was to try to get away, and so they're constantly on the attack. And then you have a team like Pete's. I think they had three guys in there, and their main guy is Dean, and Dean LaBerge is, as you can tell, is a big time sprinter. He's won multiple national titles. He's not going to get in a break. So they just need to have a team that can actually, you know, try to bring some people back. So you have a lot of ones and twos and little people you have to be careful of. And you can only go with so many attacks. And if one team is able to keep launching them, at some point it just kind of wears things down. And then you just hope that things are left in the right position. Me personally, there was a guy, Thirsty Bear, that attacked, I think, with three to go. He was out, kind of dangling out there. I don't think it was Chris Phipps. Someone said it was Chris Phipps. I think it was his other teammate. And we ended up catching him, I think, around about inside two to go. And then with one to go, we had Scott Fonseca of the Audi Reno team make an attack. And he got a little distance out there. I think personally, I should have gone for that. I should have gone for his wheel and actually either gone with him or tried to bridge up and then go through him. Because we caught him about halfway around the course. And I was set up pretty nice. I was about third wheel behind Pete's doing the lead out. And then as the stuff started to surge before the last corner, he pulled off and I had to go left around him. And most everyone went to the right and I went out in the wind. Didn't get my position back. Came through that last corner, I want to say about 11 or 12th. Then ended up 10th with a decent sprint. I don't know that it would have, I mean, I can hold my position in a sprint. I wouldn't have been going for the win, but maybe I'd be able to do a little bit better. A little disappointing for me on my point, but you know, it was actually a good race. It was clean. The wind was a little bit of a factor of not letting groups off. I haven't been doing much racing this year, so for me it was success. Plus, to mention that it was 105 degrees. So what I did to combat the heat was two water bottles, and they weren't big ones, but it was enough for me for the race. And then I had an ice sock, like a men's dress sock stuffed with ice down my back. And it does help to cool you off a little bit, keep your core temperature down. And there are quite a few people employing that method. All right. So then I stuck around and watched the 40 to 44 team, the 40 to 44 group go. And that actually was won by Dana Williams. He also won Crit Nationals in 2015. I saw that close up as well. John Bergman of Team Cliff Bar was second. And Brian Zimney of Pete's Coffee Racing was third. We'll do out the top five here. Mark Howard of Sun Power Racing and Jeremy Cottle of Team Specialized Touchstone. That was a good race to watch as well. You didn't see Dana, the winner, doing much. He's similar to Dean, where he can definitely win in a sprint. He's got that power. He had his teammate Scott Cox, who had a pretty good attempt. I want to say with around six to go, he got off, just kind of rolled off the front and then just kept it going. but it seemed to be a little bit too much. And at some point, he the field bringing him back, he kind of sat up, and then they did a little bit of work for Dana, and it came good. Talked to Brian Zimney, and he said he came through that last corner. I think he said about second place. He was perfectly placed on the lead out guy's wheel, not his own teammate, just snuck onto someone who was willing to do the work. And that guy let out from way too far out because you can't sustain it from that last corner. And Zimney had a good spot. You know, what do you do? I mean, you can't not sprint from that corner. You don't just keep driving it. You pretty much you get out and you start going because you don't want anybody to get a jump around you. So it's kind of like, well, you drag race from 300 and who can do that? And I think the best is to try to come through there, you know, 2-3 and have someone actually up and out and sprinting hard from in front of you. We could kind of just drag race off of their wheel and then try to come past them around the last 200. And that's what happened. But congrats to those guys. That's a good race. That was a pretty good size field too. Let me take the look here. We had, 17 finished. So they say about a field of 27, 37 or so had signed up. And it makes for a pretty good race. The last one of the day, the 35-39, was a little disappointing to me in the fact that only for the fact that it was a smaller size field. We had, I think, 15 that showed that started. Only Michael Claudio didn't show up, who had pre-registered. The only reason I would even say that the 35 was somewhat of a disappointment to watch is only because the field size was small, and you'd like to have more participants in a race. This one didn't. So Christopher Cobble of the Olympic Club won this. Next up was Dave Grundman in second, Ariel Herman in third, and Jake Hensley in fourth. I'm going to give you a little breakdown of what happened with this one. My two teammates, Chris Flower and Kurt Mills, both participated in there. So it was disappointing to see a race where you possibly have, you know, these are the guys just coming out of the regular ranks, a lot of ones. I'm looking here, there's Cat 1, Cat 1, Cat 1, Cat 2, Cat 1. There's a 3. There's a few 3s mixed in there, but, you know, all 1s and 2s. And pretty strong, you know, those top three were Cat 1s. And so you have guys coming out, you know, that have been racing with Pro 1, very strong. And you'd think that those guys would have a better, I mean, these guys showed up, which is good. I'm saying, why wasn't this field bigger? And that was, to me, a little bit of a disappointment. You know, it's your first chance at being able to take on Masters at that age. And, you know, you'd think that these are the guys with a lot of the power. And they did. And that was actually the difficulty of doing this race is you have 15 people in the race. And, you know, quite soon you have a Thirsty Bear. They had three guys, but two were super strong, two time trial guys, Ariel Herman. And he and his teammate, Chris Evans, that's his teammate. And Chris Evans took off fairly soon and forced some others to chase. Well, you get in a group of 15, you get four guys going across, and then maybe another one or two in the middle. That's the majority of the field now. So now you have guys that decided that they weren't going to attack and go across. They're just going to kind of ride in the field. Well, suddenly, if they're not strong enough or they didn't have the wherewithal to make that attack, they're stuck in the back, and that back is not a field anymore. That's a chase group. And that's exactly what happened. You had, you know, about four going up, then you had a few, my teammate Chris Flower ended up bridging across, and then you had a few others going, and then, you know, you had four in the back, and next thing you know, it's you know, they're dropped out. So, or they ended up getting lapped. So you ended up getting five guys actually going off the front. You had two Thirsty Bear. You had Chris Croble and Dave Grundman. Now, those two are, you would expect to win in a sprint, you know, either one of those, 1-2, Croble and Grundman. And then you had two time trial teammates, Herman and Evans. Super strong. So you saw a lot of attacking. And then the field just started to kind of decimate. And I thought at some point they were going to lap the rest of the remnants there. There were some lap guys kind of in the mix. But then, like the last six laps, the officials started to, they forgot to do, I'm assuming they forgot to do any preams. And so they did four consecutive preem laps in a row for the leaders, and it didn't behoove them to move at all. Dave Grundman just rolled across the line getting all of those. And they were seemingly just kind of had done all the attacking they wanted, and they realized it was just going to come down to the four of them, and they were going to wait for the last lap. Well, the problem was, with two laps to go, the field behind is rolling through about 25 seconds. And then on the last lap, they're still at about 25 seconds. And then you see the finish coming around, and it's a sprint, two-up sprint between Coble and Grundman. but that little pack behind had done huge work, and Jake Hensley came flying out of there and throwing his bike at the finish, just narrowly missing getting third place. So you almost had Thirsty Bear with two guys up in the top four, breakaway off of the day, and they were like, I want to say about a bike length, half a bike length, if inside a wheel, from not even getting the podium. Kudos to Hensley. Real big kudos to my teammate Chris Flower, who evidently drove that break. He did that in, I guess, in support of having someone just catch that main group up front as it was. And I also just want to say Chris Flower ended up with eighth on the day. Good, strong effort there as well. Congrats to everybody that participated out there. My goal would be to have some more people. Look, I even showed up, right? I haven't been doing much racing this year, but I went out there and supported that. It's a district. It's a state championship. And it's a chance for you to win that bear jersey, to wear that all season long. And I believe the winner of that gets basic free entry into, you know, any crit the rest of the year. So that's why you didn't win anything at the race necessarily. You won it for the next year. And that's pretty solid. Plus you get, you know, bragging rights over your team and your competitors for the remainder of the year. So since it was such a hot weekend, maybe you want some ideas. I talked a little bit about what I do to combat the heat. Let's take a listen to Nate Dunn and his coach's tip of the week.
Hi, this is Nate Dunn at Data Driven Athlete with a quick coaching tip. So with the temperature cranking up here in the Sacramento area over the last couple days, it's an important time to talk about the value of heat acclimatization. Now, heat acclimatization begins within a few days of being exposed to hot temperatures, but it takes about 7 to 14 days to be fully realized. And in addition to that, it takes riding in hot conditions about once every 3 days to maintain those adaptations you receive through heat acclimatization. So if you have any further questions about training in the heat, or if you want to jump into this topic a little bit more in depth, you can check out an episode of Data Driven Athlete Live over at the website at datadrivenathlete.com. If you have any further questions about heat acclimatization, you can shoot me an email at nate@datadrivenathlete.com. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Nate. You can contact Nate Dunn at datadrivenathlete.com. Look for him on Facebook as well. He often does live broadcasts in the morning. You can get up and watch him do a live broadcast of some of his coaching stuff. He's a great coach, has a lot of great ideas and encouragement. So if you want to sign up or just take a look and see what he's got, please do so. All right, let's head over to the Vuelta a España. I did mention that Mateo Trentin had won stage 13, and that was from Coin to Tomaros, is 198 kilometers. It looked like it was relatively made for an easy early break and then a sprint finish. It had one categorized climb early on, a Cat 3, and then some lumps before heading into the gradually down to the finish. Like I said, a deeper look into the sprint finish, and it appeared there was a slight rise, more than just a sprinter might be able to handle. So the route was still near the southwest portion of Spain, but now we're heading down towards where more climbs, especially after stage 13's finish, 14 and 15, brutal days, big, long, high climbs. But we had to get over this one sprinters type day before we got there. Okay, the start's town of Coin was once known for its ceramics, having its own color and style called Green Coin. Very original. Now the town is mostly known for tourism, hospitality, rather than those old industries. The town of Tomaros, the finishing town, it's very near the city of Seville. Nothing really of note to be found about Tomaros other than in 2016, while doing construction, workers unearthed a 600 kilogram, that's 1,300 pound, hoard of ancient Roman coins in nearby park. The bronze coins were stored, and while newly minted and stamped with inscriptions that from the emperors Maximian and Constantine, some of the coins were originally coated in silver. I imagine the workers were not allowed to keep the coins, and they were probably turned over to the state or likely to a museum, which is probably a shame because those workers would have like to have benefit in their booty. The riders probably didn't care much about that stuff either, so let's just get right back to the race. So there was an early break, and Cannondale's JPAC's Devadi Velila was in that group. He's been trying to get over these early category climbs to keep on his the polka dot jersey. He took maximum points of 5 on the Cat 3 climb and then just sat up. And then they held around a 5-minute gap on the field until it came down to the end where the big team started to finally work on bringing the break back, which they did. Then you had So you looked here, like I said, it was a little punch on the finish. And with that in mind, Quick Step was still interested in doing it. But all the doing the work, that is, but all the Grand Tour teams needed to make sure that they were up there as well. So when you look at the overall results, you do see that mixed in there. So about 3.5 kilometers to go, the road starts to pitch up. That's like a 4 or 5%. Lotto Soudal hits the front, but only for about 400 meters. Then Quick Step is back on the front at the 3K mark, and they're steadily making a pace for Trenton, followed by Burrow Hansgrohe, and then Soudal with Adam Hansen kind of making a move. 2.5 kilometers, it's mostly the sprint teams, and then Contador, and you have all these GC riders in there. So there were some corners coming in, some right-handers, some left-handers, and there was a right-hand corner, and you can see Froome, he's right up in the mix with Trenton, and then Trenton just easily moves ahead, and bam, gets his third win on the day. And the fifth for the Quick Step team. And the Froome was right at the front, and then there ended up being just a few small gaps. So you had Trenton, you had Gianni Moscon, Sky, he was able to try to make a throw at it, Anderson from Sunweb, Schwarzman of Bora Hansgrohe, and then Van Asbroek from Cannondale. Those are your top three, four, five that were right around the sprinters part. And then at six, you start having all the GC riders. You have Nibali, Froome, Kelderman, Contador, Roach, Kwiatkowski, Aru, Woods, Chavez. And then you had a little bit of gap in the losers of the day where Zakarin, Van Garderen, De La Cruz, and Minches all losing about 7 seconds. Gaps to Froome on GC, I just mentioned those because he was at the same time as the winner. So Froome is in the lead. You have second, Nibali at 59 seconds, Chavez at 2:13, Kelderman 2:17, De La Cruz fifth at 2:23. But we'll see how that all plays out in the next few days. So my thoughts on the day for that. Well, I've enjoyed Mateo Trenton, some of his interviews. Like I told you, I started with the one where he was kind of joking, like, well, I guess we'll have to win another. He's a pretty entertaining guy, and it's good to see him get his wins. And he, like I said earlier, he's actually setting his place for the upcoming Worlds team for the Italian team. The Italian team is notorious for, the bickering, infighting, and for trying to decide on what their tactic is. They usually have such a strong group to pick from, so that when they get a team for the Worlds, if you're getting a bunch of guys that are all talented and winners in their own right, now you've got to decide on this all-star team of who you're going to ride for. But I think he's putting himself right up there. From what I've seen, the Worlds race is more of a sprinter's type, so something for him. Matthews of Sunweb, the Australian, those type of guys. Sagan, is there a race that's not built for Sagan? You've got to say that Quick Step on a Grand Tour level, they're having a very, very successful season. When you look at them and you say that they seem to be having a phobia against like having a GC rider or even supporting one, they do have a lot of success at these tours regardless of that. Even then, they had Dan Martin, in the top 10. He was sixth place at the Tour de France. And here they have De La Cruz up until stage 13. And fifth as well. So they're doing something right anyway. Michael Woods placing in 13th on the stage, and he's still in the top 10. It may seem a little mundane for most, but he's totally new to World Tour racing. This is only his second Grand Tour, and his first was this year's Giro. So it's his first year of even doing Grand Tour racing. And bike racing in general, he's pretty new to it as well. What I look though is that the fact that he's up there in these stages like this, where placement itself onto those finishing sections is vital. And he's actually getting placed up there quite well. And the short climbs, it's actually impressive. A lot of credit should probably be given to Woods himself, but also for his team for just putting him in those positions. It's just the little things, day after day that you get him in the right spot. I mean, look at Aru when he had the yellow jersey at the Tour de France and they had a finishing sprint that was similar to this with a little kick up, and he ended up losing the lead at the Tour de France, all because his team had him too far back and he was too far back. But it is up to the team to come by and say, hey, you know what? You're going to be moved up and you're going to get on my wheel and we're just going to scoot you on up to the front. As a support rider myself, that's what you do. Aru's team was lacking at that lackluster, and they were just lacking that in general at the tour. And it's good to see Cannondale Drapac is not missing out on that. All right. So I hope you did your job and you watched stage 14 and 15 of the Vuelta over this weekend. Those are definitely ones you should be watching. I'm only going to kind of recap them on the results themselves, give a little talk about what I thought were some highlights, and not really do a step-by-step of those in depth, partly because I just watched them. I've been busy this weekend, and Just maybe you don't want to hear like a full recap of that. But stage 14 was won by Rafael Majka. He was impressive. He was in an early break, and they had several categorized climbs that they went over, and it looked like the second to last climb of the day, he was probably going to get caught. But then he just stayed on it, and he stayed on the motor, and he was able to hold them off by 27 seconds over the top. The surprise, however, was the second place, Lopez, and the Superman, as his nickname is wont to be. And his only coming in 27 seconds down. He left Froome and Nibali back. They were kind of, you know, looking at each other again, and he went on and he attacked and was able to not quite claw back all the way to Majka, but he was able to take some more time back. And at some point they might need to start watching him. So you had Lopez in second at 27 seconds, Nibali getting a time bonus, and the third place at 31, same time as Froome, Zakarin, Kelderman. And then Contador actually got dumped a little bit on that climb. He came in at 37 seconds. Right behind him was Wout Poels, and then Chavez at 57 seconds, Arua minute three, Michael Woods coming in 11th at 113. He did suffer a little bit on the day. A little more of the losers were De La Cruz at 15th, 119 back with Kreuzwijk, TJ 143. He was looking pretty good there, and then kind of spit out the back near the top and was able to hold on some. So the overall after stage 14, Chris Froome, second place, Nibali at 55 seconds, Kelderman at 217, Zakarin at 225, Chavez at 239. I'm going to just skip down. Woods is at ninth, 323. But here's the key one to start to look at. Lopez, 10th place at 348. So we'll see what happens with him. He's got a second place. He'd had a win just previously. So let's take a look at stage 15 and see if he can produce on his second place. All right, so stage 15, well, we've talked about this profile as well. It had a Cat 1, and then we had another Cat 1 about 109 kilometers from the finish, and then the finish was up at 130, and the Cat 1 rolled right into the over-category, the special category climb. And went up to about 2,500 meters, which is well over 8,000 feet in elevation. This road was more wide open. It wasn't your twisty little turn, and it looked like very wind exposed. So when you start getting riders up at this elevation and they start to do any kind of cracking, and you, at that elevation, if you start to crack and you put it into the red and you're not coming back you don't very quickly. You really need to pull it back and then kind of regroup. You could start losing massive amounts of time. What we had was Contador actually on the Cat 1 attack, get quite a big lead out. Well, not a big lead, but he was up the road, and that was his goal for the day, was basically go on the attack, see what can happen, and try to just take everything on all at once and see what he can do. So he was out there. From his group, you had Yates attacking, and he got up clear up the road as well. Because what happened was Contador ended up getting caught, and then eventually he ended up getting spit out. He ended up 13th on the day, down 127 to the winner. Well, who was the winner? Well, like I said, Yates was up the road, and he was looking very strong. And then from the group came Lopez again, Superman. And he attacks out. He ends up catching Yates, and Yates had been looking very strong, and Yates just went right to his wheel, and it looked pretty good, and then boom, it just exploded, and it would be like watching a car drive and just seeing pistons fly out through the hood. It was kind of the same image in my mind. I mean, he was suddenly just basically a dead stop, not quite to the point of Kwiatkowski in the Tour de France putting his foot down, but it was almost reminiscent. I mean, if the cameras had stayed on him, that might have been happening. You might have seen him turn around and go downhill just to kind of recuperate. And Lopez stays away, and within the last, I want to say, kilometer or so, you had Zakarin actually attacking as well, and then Zakarin stays away as well. So you have Lopez coming in with another win. You have Zakarin at 36 seconds, Kelderman 45, Chavez 47, along with Froome and Woods at 50 seconds, Nibali at 53, Wout Poels comes in, Menchie's in ninth. And Arue back to 11th place, a minute down. Bardet had given it a shot during the day. He stayed up somewhat with the group. You know, there was a smaller group that had been established there, and Van Garderen was part of it, and he looked really good. And matter of fact, he came in to finish the day as 17th, 319 down. His teammate, Nicholas Roach, just exploded early on the day, and I think on the first Category 1 climb, and never came back. I think he can lose over 16 minutes or so. But it was interesting about Van Garderen, and you know, he's so closed-mouthed during this tour. We're not seeing anything from him. The only thing I could usually get is going to the BMC team website itself, and they'll sometimes have a quote from him, but I don't think he's meeting with press. He's not giving any comments out, which is too bad because, you know, TJ, you're not the focus of this tour, but it would be kind of cool just to, I mean, Michael Woods is out there as a Canadian talking up, and he's very vocal, got a lot of good things to say. He's very open about, you know, kind of his fitness and his form and how things are going. And it's enjoyable. That's kind of what the fans are looking for. You know, we're not looking at this bike racing on just kind of a mundane level. We like to see the in-depth, and I'd like to hear a little bit about it. So it'd be interesting to know what exactly happened to TJ. I mean, he's still, let's see what he's at here. TJ is now 13th place, 8/16th back. It's not the worst. It's not the best either, but like I said, he was up there with like maybe five or six guys. He was still rolling well, and then it was about the last 4 or 5K, he just disappeared. And a lot of these guys that are up above him, I would say from Menchie's on down, from ninth place, TJ had been, they got dropped before he did. And then all those guys ended up coming around him and passing him and putting actually, you know, minutes into him. So that's a little disappointing. But once again, you have Lopez kind of being the superstar of the day, and he's moved himself all the way up to sixth place. He's at 251 back. So they're going to have to start paying a little attention to him. So here's your overall general classification. You have Froome. You have Nibali at 101, second place. Zacharin has now moved to the podium spot at 208. Kelderman, 211, so there's a real tight mix there. Chavez, 239. Lopez at 251. And then there's a break back to seventh place with Aroux. Aroux and Woods are both close. They're all 2 seconds apart. So what's coming up tomorrow is, well, today's a rest day. And then what's coming up tomorrow is a 40-kilometer time trial. It's not got much for elevation at all. It's right around the 450 meter elevation, and might crest to about 500 and back down below. So it's not much climbing. I mean, there's some up and down, but you're not, that's not the gist of what the time trial is about. With that, you look at the top, and anybody that's close in here, you're going to probably see Van Garderen jump over Lopez, Kruiswijk, at a, maybe, you know, a few of these other guys that are in front of him. I don't know about De La Cruz. But then you're going to see maybe Woods and Aroux. That might be an interesting battle around the 7-8 spot when they're 2 seconds apart. And I don't know how well either one of those does. I know Woods has made the comment that he came into this only expecting to be stage hunting. So his time trial preparation is nil. So he's not done anything. Chavez, Kelderman, you know, really Froome. It looks like Froome's probably just going to edge out his time overall. So that's what we have. And then the days following, you have the time trial. And then Wednesday, you have another mountain finish day with the special category climb finish. And that's Wednesday. And Thursday, it's more of it's a lumpy day with a little kick at the end, but it's like a Cat 3 kick. So that should be fun to watch, because you're going to bring more guys into the mix, a little bit more like you saw on the first few weeks of the tour before we started going to Friday, which is a little bit more lumpy as well, but it finishes on a downhill. That'll bring similar guys into it, maybe another day with the way Trenton's been going to be in there. And then you have Saturday, which is the Angerloo, and brutal, kind of like we've seen this last weekend, and that will be a barnstorm, and it'll be fun to watch. All right, so besides the Vuelta, there's still other races to be had around the world. We have the Tour of Alberta up in Canada, and also the Tour of Britain just starting. Tour of Alberta started September 1, Friday. It ends today. 4-day stage race, and kind of starts with a bang, with up some good climbing, and then just kind of, as far as the terrain goes, it peters out a bit. So some climbing, less and less climbing, and today is just kind of a circuit race. So the tone can be set, and you can have the gaps created on day one and just kind of held there, and that looks to be what's going to happen. So stage one, Delta Airlines stage one, Jasper to Marmot ski base area, 165 kilometers. With the finish name including the word ski area, you can probably imagine the type of finish in store for the riders on this stage. Uphill. Live coverage, they actually have it on Global News, so you can tune into that. Check it out on Tour of Alberta. It's probably too late for that because as this is broadcasting, I believe the last stage is going on. So ignore that comment. But Jasper, look, I was going to do a whole little thing and try to do this earlier out. And Jasper is a pretty cool little town up just north of Banff where I've gone skiing up there in Canada. Pretty cool. But Jasper itself is known for constant internment camps at World War One, and actually Canada ended up having over 24 internment camps during this time period for fear of enemy aliens. And I guess it was due to their fear of Ukrainian Canadians. So they had a little issue with that just after World War One, and you can check that out. Take a look at Jasper, and that's kind of one of their little things there. So, okay, enough Canadian bashing. The race itself was pretty neat. You had Rally going 1-2 with Evan Huffman winning, and Sepp Kuss, his teammate, coming in second on the first stage, kind of setting up the scenario for what you're going to see for the remainder of the tour. Now, Huffman only got 15 seconds on his teammate. So you really don't look at that because that's not the threat you look for on the team. And in third place was Slegder at 28 seconds, then Chris Jones of UHC at 30 seconds. In fifth place was Jack Burke of the Velo team at 32 seconds. Very impressive ride by him. Alex Howes in sixth place of Cannondale at 38. So kind of bunched up there, but Evan Huffman obviously being able to get some little break off the front and hold his, I guess it was about a 14 kilometer finish climb, and he was able to, I'm not sure when he actually took off on that, but he ended up holding that lead out there. Stage two, Cannondale comes through with the win with Wouter Whippet. Sprint finish, John Murphy in second, Ryan McAnally in third, and Michael Hernandez in fourth. What was interesting about that, and I kept watching it over and over, was to see McCabe go down. The finish was a left, right to left kind of bend in the road. And as they were turning, I don't know, one guy from the Elevate team kind of moved out to the right, but McCabe just came flying on the right and slid out, and he was pretty banged up. And I'm not sure what happened. I couldn't see if he was crossing wheels, but it looked like he kind of got ejected. Anyway, haven't been able to find out what the result was of that. So there was also, I'm trying to remember if it was stage three or two, I also saw where Alex Howes, he was showing the field and he wanted to get out of the pack, and he just full shoulder blow into a Silver Pro rider. And the questions kind of on Twitter were, was it the guy next to him? Was he pushing that guy? And I'm trying to remember the name of who that was, but that's his friend. And he said, no, it wasn't that. But he didn't really make a comment as to what the deal was. I don't think there's ever a time, and you look, it was a pretty reduced field. There's not a time to be, and that might have been on stage one, actually, but there's not a time, actually, that you're going to need to be throwing shoulders to that extent. I mean, if that guy had gone down, then you're saying, what? Well, he just wanted to get out of the pack. It was, you know, like I said, it was going up a bit of a climb. It seemed like kind of a douche move to me. I think Alex Howes is a pretty nice guy, from what I've been able to tell. He's obviously a good rider. Sometimes you get this with the World Tour guys that come back and race with the Continental, and they're, you know, you start to have an Alex Howes who's probably, you know, someone, if he's over in the races over in Europe, he's definitely not going to be a guy that's going to be winning the race. Nothing against him. He's just not the same caliber as, you know, if he's doing one of the classics or what have you, he could, you know, hope to get into a top 25. Whereas over here, which we're going to talk about on stage three, he could win. And he also did so in the Tour of Colorado. Colorado Classic, you know, he's up there in that. And well, he did win a stage, and then also in the Cascade Classic. So maybe he feels, and I think you see this where they're a little bit more pumped up on, hey, I want to get out of this field, let me out. And some guy's just sitting there, you know, not really opening the door for him to allow him room to get out. And, you know, you got to make your own way. And I guess his making his own way is to kick down the door. And I think that's kind of a shitty move, because, I mean, there isn't much that you can say. You can look at that and say, oh, I feel for Alex. He had every right to do that. So unless I see an explanation otherwise, you know, and his thing on Twitter was the guy on his right. So he bashed out on his left. But the guy on his right, no, that guy's a cool guy. He's a good Coloradan. He's a good guy. So that's not what happened. It basically implying that the guy on the left was some sort of douche and therefore he deserved to have that. I don't know. Seems a little harsh and probably something that I would like to see him maybe address that, apologize for it perhaps. Anyway, so Alex Howes, he's leading out his teammate for stage three, Wouter Whippet, and he actually about 150, 200 to go, kind of just kicks really hard, and there's a gap that's open. And he ends up holding it to the finish, and his teammate Whippet gets second, so they go 1-2, and then Colin Joyce to the rally ends up third. So the general classification, Evan Huffman still holding he's 18 seconds over Sepp Kuss, because he jumped out in the middle of the stage. There was a sprint spot halfway through, and Huffman actually went for it. And, so you see the yellow jersey actually getting a time bonus in the middle. So he moved up from 15 seconds on his own teammate to 18 seconds. All right, so as I'm recording this, I have no clue as to what's going to happen on stage four. It looks like Evan Huffman, who's a local here, he's from the El Dorado Hills area, right around where I live, California, Sacramento, and it would be good to see him. He's obviously had a great year with his two wins in Tour of California, and I think he's going to end up pulling this off. It's going to be a little bit of work for his team. If you look at the profile, it appears to be a little bit of undulation, so it could have a little bit of a rough day into it for him, but the team of Rally is pretty good team. And I mean, the profile is just a little bit up and down and it's all day. So I think it's a circuit race and it should be something that they can handle, but it will be interesting because you've put them under pressure pretty harsh. You know, they're 8-man teams. It could possibly be done. And you have some of these World Tour teams. I mean, if Cannondale Drapac really wants to put the hammer down, they can try to do it, but I wouldn't put anything past Rally. I mean, I think they're up to the task and I think they should be able to hold their own. Last race we're going to talk about is the Tour of Britain. 8 stages in Britain with some good sprinters, and it looks like some pretty good competition. You had yesterday the first finish won by Caleb Ewing of Orica Scott from Australia, and it was a pretty cool finish. Actually, there's some cobblestones, and right over the finish line, it was like a lot of twists and turns, and it looks like they had to do more maneuvering right over the finish line than just going into it. But, you get some of these into these cities. Caleb Ewing won. Boson Hagen of Dimension Data was second. Ilya Villaviani of Sky third. Christoph of Katusha in fourth, and Gaviria in fifth. So pretty cool to see that whole contingent there of really pretty good sprinters. So you had Caleb Ewing as the overall leader going into today's second stage. Today's second stage was a little more interesting in that similar finish where it kind of comes into town and there's all these twists and turns. The last 1K, it's a lot of crit-like atmosphere. And when you get this crit-like atmosphere, one of the guys you're going to probably start to look to see the producing out to the front is Caleb Ewing. He's actually national crit champion in Australia. And what you saw then was Dimension Data coming to the front along with Sky. You had Gaviria once again, Boson Hagen there with Dimension Data, and Caleb Ewing. And Caleb Ewing got on Viviani's wheel, kind of on the left-hand barrier, and Dimension Data took to the front. And Boson Hagen he actually passes his teammate on the right-hand side, goes more to the middle of the road. And then as he's sprinting past them, he comes all the way over to the left, squeezes Viviani into the barrier, and then moves back over to the right. Viviani has to sit up. Caleb Ewing has to kind of sit up, and they don't end up getting to sprint. What ends up happening is Boson Hagen comes over the line first, but he gets relegated. So Viviani actually gets the win. Dylan Groenewegen, team Lotto Jumbo, gets second. Gaviria in third. Caleb Ewing in fourth. And Christoph in fifth. So your overall situation there is Ilya Viviani takes the overall lead from Caleb Ewing. Ewing is now in second place, 4 seconds back. So there's time bonuses on the line for the sprinters to pass the jersey back and forth. Boson Hagen in third. And all right, so that's where we have it for now. Take a look at us next week. We're going to continue recapping the Vuelta. I do have a guest lined up, as I'd intimated earlier. And we just had to get some logistics worked out with racing this weekend. And Giro de San Francisco going on today. So that would be interesting to see the results out of that, which we had mentioned previously. So stay cool out there. Once again, scroll back through if you missed it. Coach Nate Dunn's tip of the week for how to stay cool and to ride in the heat. Hope to see you on the road. Take care.